Now, I'm seeing some new faces, as well as some familiar ones. And to help everyone understand the background of tonight's discussion, I will speak about some basic principles. Now, everyone wants to be happy. Is there anyone here who doesn't want to be happy? If you want to be happy, raise your hand. Okay, so everyone wants to be happy. And if I ask you, are you always happy? How many can say that you're always happy? No one. But we want to be happy always, but we're not always happy. Because we do not know the process for becoming perfectly and everlastingly happy. Now, that very question of happiness, are you happy, raises another question, which is, who are you? Because if we don't know who we are, we won't know what is really in our self-interest. We don't know what our real self is. So, most people in the present cultural climate think that they are the body. And they do whatever they think will make the body happy. The body is composed of the senses and mind. So they want to do things that will give pleasure to their senses and mind. Please come in, sir. There's plenty of room here. Yes, come very close. So the reality is that we are not the body, but we are the soul within the body. And the body is just a machine that the soul is operating. And as soon as the soul leaves the body does not work anymore. And we say it's dead. Actually, it's always dead, but when the soul is present, it we say it's alive because it is animated by the presence of the soul. And the soul within the body is like a bird within a cage. By nature, the soul wants to be free. But it is encaged in the body, like a bird in a cage. And even if you polish the bars of the cage very nicely and decorate the cage with nice cushions covered with silk, nice aromatic incense and flowers and gems and jewels. But if you don't feed the bird, will the bird be happy? No. No. So we are like the bird and in the cage, and even if we have a nice house, a nice car, a good bank balance, and all the comforts and amenities for the body, but if we don't feed the soul, we won't be happy. And the soul is fed by association with the Supreme Soul, Krishna. We independently are incomplete. In one sense, all of our endeavors are meant to make us feel complete. We feel incomplete, insufficient, so we think, whatever, if I get more money, I'll feel more complete, or if I get a better house, I'll feel more complete, and on and on. But we never do feel complete, because we can feel complete only in relation to Krishna. We are parts of Krishna, and Krishna is the whole. So we can feel complete only when we are reunited with the whole. And the process by which we are reunited with the whole is generally called yoga, but in particular the most efficient and complete method is called bhakti yoga. And through bhakti yoga, especially chanting and hearing about Krishna, we come in touch with Krishna, and our soul's thirst for happiness becomes quenched. And especially by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And we should not stop. Kirtaniya Sadahari, we should not stop. Even while engaged in other activities, we can chant. There's no hard and fast rules. So while doing housework, at the same time we can chant. While riding in the car, we can chant. Going to school, we can chant. Whatever else we're doing, we can chant. Even when eating, we can chant. Describe that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they would chant while they were eating. And if they wanted more of something, they would chant the holy names to indicate that they wanted more of some preparation. So this is so easy, and the only thing we have to do is do it. Sometimes we have a causeless unwillingness to do what is best for us. But it's really very easy once you begin. And you can very quickly feel the effects. So we always chant,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And we feel happy. We often challenge people who are skeptical or reluctant, we challenge them. Can you chant the Hare Krishna mantra and not smile? And they can never do it. They can never do it. What do you think, Radhika? Can you chant the mantra and not smile? No. Yes, it's immediate. It's natural. But the thing is that we have to sustain it. It's like when you turn on the light, you can see, you can make your way around and you can accomplish things. But if you turn off the light, then you're back in the darkness. So chanting Hare Krishna turns on the light, but you have to keep it on. Then there's no problem. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually Krishna himself. But when I say Krishna, even when I say Krishna, people don't know who is Krishna. That is also another type of ignorance. People think, yeah, first they're like ordinary people, they think they're the body. That's all. And then a little more advanced, people are aware of some spiritual existence, but they think that the spiritual existence is impersonal. And so they think that the goal of life is for the individual soul to merge and become one with the Supreme Spirit. And that is another misconception that also leads to misery. Because we see that the soul is by nature active. So, because it's not the body that's active, when the soul leaves the body, it's dead. So it's actually the soul that's active. And so why should we think that the soul is active in conditional life, but inactive in liberated life? It doesn't make sense. It's like the bird is active in the cage, it's going here and there, wishing it had some food, but it's active. And when the bird is released from the cage, it's also active. But because it's free, it can fly, it can enjoy. So the soul is by nature active, whether in the stage of bondage or in the liberated stage. So then what are the activities of the soul in liberation? So that's where people have the wrong idea. They think that to become free from material bondage, they have to stop activity, which is impossible. And then they think, well, they don't know about spiritual activities, so then they think, well, we have to engage in material activities. So spiritual activities are what we discuss: chanting, hearing, remembering Krishna, and serving Krishna in different ways. Serving Krishna's mission is a liberated activity. As we were discussing in the morning, if someone follows the laws of the land, he has nothing to fear from the police or the government. But if someone breaks the laws, then naturally he is going to be in anxiety. So if we abide by the laws of God, we can move about freely in the world without fear. And that means that we recognize that God is the proprietor of everything. He is the enjoyer of everything. And he is ultimately the best friend of the living entities. If we have this understanding, we can be peaceful and happy. So, now this requires a revolution in consciousness and a revolution in our activities. Because we are so used to working for ourselves, and everyone else is doing the same thing, but they're not happy. They're working for themselves in the false conception that they're the body or the mind to be happy, but they're not happy. And if we imitate them, we will also be the same. We will be we'll also be frustrated and disappointed. So, man is known by the company he keeps. So we need to associate with devotees who are serving Krishna. And then gradually we can learn to serve Krishna and feel comfortable serving Krishna. So, Raghunath Das, the recipient of Lord Nityananda's mercy, he was born in an extremely wealthy family. He was the only son, maybe the only child of his parents, and his father had a brother who had no children. So the whole hopes of the family were put on Raghunath Das. But Raghunath Das, from his very childhood, was spiritually inclined. Like many of these children, are spiritually inclined. It comes natural to them. Why are you smiling at each other? Because you know it's true. They're smiling at each other. Yes, we are spiritually inclined. From the very beginning. It's actually natural. And they are happy. They are happy. So sometimes the parents get worried that, well, if the child is too much devoted to Krishna and the practices of bhakti, what will happen to the child's future? And that is a good question. And sometimes the parents are thinking further into the future, what will happen to our family lineage? So Raghunath Das's father and uncle were having the same thoughts, that Raghunath Das is not interested in materialistic life, and if he leaves home and joins the devotees, what will happen to our estate? So they, because it happened that Raghunath Das would try to leave home and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then his father and uncle would have to send a search party to find him and bring him back. And finally, they kept guards to make sure that he did not run away from home to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, on one occasion, Raghunath Das met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally and asked him what he should do. So all of you spiritually inclined children should listen to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Raghunath Das. He said, you should return home and externally you should be a very good boy, and internally you should think of Krishna and be detached from the materialistic so-called pleasures and comforts of life. And Raghunath Das did that. He sometimes the example is given of the lotus flower, that the roots of the lotus are in the mud in the pond, but the flower itself is not touched by the water. So, as they say, you can be in the world but not of it. And I have heard so many stories, very interesting stories, of how people met devotees, but they didn't know that the person was a devotee, because the devotee externally was behaving like any other person at work or at school or in whatever context. But there was something different that they could see. There's something different. They didn't know what it was, but they could see that there was something different. And then when the opportunity arose, they got a book or an invitation to the temple or a mantra card, and they became Krishna conscious. So children can be a very strong influence on their parents. Of course, the parents are thinking that they want to influence their children. But the children can be a very good influence on their parents. Because according to sociological studies, the main impetus for all human activity is family affection. Just today, I mean, it could be said of anyone. I'm just thinking of it because it happened today. The family had come all the way from India to visit the temple and associate with devotees and attend the Sadhu Sangha retreat. But their boys wanted to see some of America, and so they flew away to Las Vegas. Because of family affection. That is the point. That is the main factor that drives human interaction. It's family affection. So if the children want to come to the temple and they really want to come, then the parents will bring them. If the children really want to go to the satsang, then the parents will take them, and that's good. But in the parents' minds, it is only good up to a point. They want their children to be pious, but not too pious. To the point where they want to leave everything and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Raghunath, don't be a crazy fellow, but return home and behave like an expert businessman, because they were in the business family, externally. And internally, you think of Krishna and serve Krishna. Now, from very early in my attempts at Krishna consciousness, I was attracted by this image of Raghunath Das Goswami, although I didn't really know much about him. Even what I told you now, I didn't know, because we didn't have the Chaitanya Charitamrita when I first joined. We did have the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but that was a very important book for philosophy. Lord Chaitanya's important discussions with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Rai, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. But it didn't have all the history of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. But somehow I had this image of just going to Vrindavan and wandering and chanting. And I never said anything to Srila Prabhupada, but he must have known my mind, because one day in his small room in Juhu, before we had the big temple. See, Brenda's going like this to her mother. An example of how a child can be a good influence on a parent. So, but this, in this case, it's mutual. There's good influences on each other. So, you know, I have this sort of, you know, romantic idea of just going to Vrindavan and just wandering here and there, hey Radhe. And but Srila Prabhupada, he had a mission. You know, he wanted to establish Krishna consciousness in Bombay. He had a big estate, 4 acres in Juhu Beach, very prime property. And one day he said to me that Raghunath Das Goswami first managed his father's property very expertly. And then he went to Vrindavan and became a Goswami. And he was saying, in the same way, you know, I want you to manage the Juhu estate, and then you can go to Vrindavan and become a Goswami. So, there are different phases in a person's life, but the common factor is Krishna consciousness. And in one sense, it doesn't matter what we do, as long as we are Krishna conscious. If we are Krishna conscious, we will be happy. And Krishna will be happy. So, of course, different people have different propensities, different capacities, and this is always a question. In fact, from when the children are little, well, I don't know, in every culture, but even when I was growing, from a very early age, people ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, usually, well, it'll be something, depending on what's the popular culture, but, you know, want to be a cowboy. Or a policeman. Or I heard that after 9/11, there's like so many heroic firemen, like, and the children, that was like, that was number one on the list. When I grow up, I want to be a fireman. And we actually had a very heroic fireman come to the temple on I guess it was two weekends ago.
May 19th.
Yeah. Because usually they, you know, they get all, put on all their gear and their masks, and then they all go in together with their firefighting equipment. But one of the firemen, he just rushed in. He didn't even, I think, put his mask on or his full gear, and he just rushed in to try to put out the fire as soon as possible before it could spread anymore. They're very heroic. We can also learn from them how to be heroic for Krishna, how to take risks for Krishna. So, cowboy, policeman, fireman, pilot, I don't know what is current now. But I had this idea, after coming to Krishna consciousness, to be like Raghunath Das Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada said, first you manage your father's estate expertly, and then you go to Vrindavan to become a Goswami. And it was very intense. I remember on one occasion, I went to the airport to receive Srila Prabhupada, and we were driving in the car to Juhu. And just in the drive from the front gate to the back of the property where Srila Prabhupada was living in one of the old apartment buildings, he was just pointing out things left and right that were wrong. What is this? You know, what is that? Like, I remember some of the things, not it, but say if a light was left on. What is that? Why is that light on? And my head was reeling. And then we had a lot of palm trees, coconut trees, and we would hire people. They would come. They're quite skillful. They climb up and they have their. And so one of the men was carrying away some of the palm leaves, dry palm leaves. He said, "What is that? You cannot be allowed to take the leaves." And it was like literally my it's like so many things so quickly, and I was like so young, my head was reeling. So it was not easy. And it may be true in general that unless one submits oneself to some severe discipline, one cannot really improve. At the Sadhu Sangha retreat, I had, well, not only there, before and after, but I had some talks with Madhava, great kirtan leader, and he met Ayendra Prabhu, who was the head of the 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan, when he was about 18 years old, and he had a natural ability to play mridanga. Did you play mridanga this morning?
Yeah.
I thought so. So, he had a natural ability to play mridanga. And he was very good. But he wouldn't chant while he was playing mridanga. Were you chanting while you were playing mridanga? Well, Madhava wasn't chanting. And like, every evening, Ayendra would call him into his room and like smash him for not singing. And the reason he gave was that it's a natural tendency for the mridanga player to race ahead and play faster than the lead singer. So Ayendra Prabhu said that if you sing, then you have to be in the same tempo as the lead singer, and you won't be able to race ahead on the mridanga. But if you don't sing and you're just absorbed in playing the mridanga, then you just get into it more and more and more, and pretty soon you're going faster than the lead singer. And that disturbs the mood of the kirtan. So, as he described it, it was very heavy. Of course, if you're doing something relatively simple, then it's relatively easier to chant while you're doing it. But if you're doing intricate drum beats, you know, the tendency might be just to concentrate on playing the instrument and not sing. But Andrew Prabhu wouldn't allow it. And I've heard other stories of how Andhra Prabhu would really... One boy told me the very first time he joined the 24-hour kirtan, Andhra Prabhu just smashed him. And he said, "Who is he? You know, who does he think he is? You know, I've just come for the first time." But those who submitted to that training, they really benefited. So that's part of it. Of course, it is chanting and dancing. It's all chanting and dancing. It is blissful. But on occasion, if one wants to come to a higher level, he has to submit himself to some discipline. And that helps us to grow. And it also, it makes us realize we're not the body. That our behavioral patterns and thought patterns are not us. They can be changed. Who we really are, we are eternal servants of Krishna. And when we act as eternal servants of Krishna, we are happy. And Raghunath Das, in the end, he got his desire to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fulfilled. And so he is an example of someone who is exemplary in household life, and then he was exemplary in renounced life. He set both examples. And in our movement, there are many examples of people who gave up what could have been very spectacular careers in the material world for the sake of Krishna consciousness. And one is Yamuna Devi, Srila Prabhupada's disciple Yamuna Devi. If you know who Yamuna Devi is, raise your hand. You're sure you know? Okay, who? It's a famous devotee who's a good kirtan leader and a good preacher. That's true. That's absolutely correct. And can anyone supply any more details? Rinda. Yes, she sings the Govinda prayers that we play at the time of deity greeting in every temple in ISKCON, all over the world. Yes. And does anyone know who produced the record with the Govinda prayers? Radhika? Oh, I thought you raised your hand. Okay. Who's saying? Are you speculating or do you know? Yes. George Harrison, the Beatles. It was produced on Apple Records. And George Harrison plays on the record. And one of the tracks on the album is Bhaja Hure Mana Sri Nandanandana. That was not recorded for the album. Yamuna Devi was just singing that on her own. And George recorded it without her even knowing that he was recording it. And then he dubbed some basic instrumentation, and that's one of the tracks. She had so much devotion and such a beautiful voice. So George told her that if you like, I can make you the most famous female vocalist in the world, or one of them. You could be at the top. You could be at the top. But she declined. She was not interested in that. She wanted to serve Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. And she sang for Krishna. And she was not the loser. And this is also a very important point, that one who gives to Krishna, one who surrenders to Krishna, is not the loser, but is the gainer by many times. Once, when I was first coming to the Boston Temple, a man in the audience asked Srila Prabhupada if he was happy. And Srila Prabhupada replied that when I was in India, I had 5 children, and there were always so many problems. Of course, you all are like angels, so I'm sure there are no problems for your parents. But Srila Prabhupada said that that before I came to Krishna, I had 5 children, and there were always so many problems. And now, after surrendering to Krishna, I have 500 children, and I love them, and they love me, and there are no problems. And then the man said, yes, but that's material. And Srila Prabhupada said that I have many other platforms of happiness, but I'm giving this example to you because this is something that you can relate to. So this is a very important point, that one who surrenders to Krishna is not the loser, but he's the gainer by many times. And one of my favorite stories in the Krishna book also illustrates that point. Who knows what is the Krishna book? Yes. Yes. Yes, it tells all of Krishna's pastimes. And what is it based on? Where did those pastimes come from originally? Yes, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna book is a summary study of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in those days, there was a system of barter. You know what is barter? Yes, exchange of goods. Exchange of goods. So, one day, a lady who was selling fruits came to the house of Nanda and Yashoda with her fruits. And she wanted to sell her fruits, but the medium of exchange was not money, but it was other goods. And Krishna saw the lady, and he was very small. I think maybe 3 years old, younger than you are. But he had seen how his parents would exchange goods. So he went into the pantry and he filled his hands with rice. And he was going to give her rice in exchange for the fruit. But because his hands were so small and he wasn't very expert at keeping them tight, so by the time he reached the lady with the basket of fruit, almost all the grains of rice had fallen out of his hands. But still, that lady was so captivated by little Krishna's beauty that she didn't mind. She just wanted to make this boy happy. So she gave him all the fruits and she was just happy that he was happy. And then she saw that in her basket where all the fruits had been, it was filled with jewels and gems and gold and precious metals. And so that is what happened. She gave her fruit to Krishna in love, spontaneous love, not to get something in return. But in return, she got a basket full of priceless treasures, gems and jewels. So that is the lesson, that one who gives to Krishna is not the loser, but the gainer by many times. Now, sometimes it happens in the life of a devotee that there may be a reversal. Otherwise, someone might think, well, this is a good business. I give Krishna fruit and I get jewels in exchange. This is a good business. And then people would come to Krishna, not in the mood of pure devotion, but in a business mood. So Krishna, he does reward his devotees, but he may not do it immediately. And that's also a test, that is my devotee serious about serving me, or does my devotee want some material gain? And then if the material gain is not there, then the person will go somewhere else. So that's a test of Krishna. But ultimately, if one passes the test, then Krishna will give one things much more valuable than one could ever imagine. And ultimately, he gives himself. That's the goal. And that's the greatest treasure. Premadan, the treasure of pure love. But again, this business mentality is there. It happens in India, but it probably happens here. I've seen the sign at Radhakala Chanji Dham, a list of sponsorship, and receive the blessings of the oldest deities worshipped in the Western world. So people see that, receive the blessings. What does that mean? Often people have the idea that the blessing will be the fulfillment of some material desire. And it happens, especially the one deity in India, Balaji, Tirupati. It's known to be very generous in fulfilling desires, and so people go there. The politicians go there. Mm-hmm. They want to get blessings for the election. Even the Prime Minister of Mauritius went to Tirupati to get blessings for the elections there. And sometimes they make a vow, like, if I get such and such, then I will give such and such. It's like a deal. They don't know who they're dealing with, but it's like, it's like a deal. If I get such and such, I'll give you such and such. And they don't always, they don't even, you know, like there was one joke it's a very good joke, but I heard a joke in India that a worshipper went to the deity and told, he was going to the racetrack to bet on the horses. So he went to the deity and he said, "Lord, if I win 100,000 rupees, I will give you 50,000. So, okay. He went, he bet on his horse, but his horse didn't come in first, but he came in second. And he won 50,000 rupees. So he went to the deity and he said, "Lord, you didn't trust me. You took your half first." So, but the fact is that the more we give to Krishna, the more we get. But the ultimate benefit is we get pure devotion for Krishna, and then we get Krishna. It is said that the impersonalists, they want to become one with God. But the devotees, they can become greater than God. Not that they actually become greater, but God comes under the control of their pure love. There was in Calcutta, our landlord was a Bengali man, and he had his own theories of spiritual life, and he met one of our devotees named Achyutananda, and they were having some talk, and Mr. Singh Rai said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually the origin of Radha and Krishna. We had understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the combined form of Radha and Krishna, but he was saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the origin of Radha and Krishna. And that he is greater than Radha and Krishna. And he gave the example of milk and sugar, that Rasagula is greater than milk and sugar separately. So, Achyutananda asked Srila Prabhupada, there's a room full of devotees, and he said, "So, who comes first? You know, is it Radha and Krishna, or is it Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?" And Srila Prabhupada said that it's Radha and Krishna. It's the same example, that first the milk and sugar exist, and then they combine and become Rasagula. And then Achyutananda asked, who's greater? And Srila Prabhupada paused, and then he opened his eyes and he said, Radharani. Radharani is the greatest. And then he pointed to a print on the wall that showed Radharani sort of sitting on a higher level and Krishna sort of kneeling at her feet and begging for her favor. And then he said, Nanda Maharaj is the greatest. And he pointed to another picture that showed little Krishna carrying Nanda Maharaj's chappals, sandals on his head. He said, Nanda Maharaj is the greatest. And then he said that the devotee is the greatest. Because Krishna comes under the control of his devotee. He likes to serve his devotee. Sometimes people misunderstand. For example, when Lord Ramachandra was traveling south in India in search of Sita, he came to Rameshwaram and he worshipped Lord Shiva there. So people wrongly cite this incident as proof that Lord Shiva is greater than Lord Rama. But that, of course, is not the case. But the explanation is that Krishna likes to serve his devotees. He likes to worship his devotees. You know the story of Sudama Brahman? Does anyone know the story of Sudama Brahman? Let's hear you. You think you can tell it? Do we have is there another microphone? Well, let's set it up in the meantime.
His family was very poor. As he was a Brahmin family, like he would only go to 5 houses and beg, and whatever he got from those houses, that's what he would keep as his alms and feed his family. And his wife, they couldn't see, like they had children also, they couldn't see their children starving, and the children would come home and say, oh look, the other kids, they have such nice clothes, and they're eating such nice food. Can you make some food like that for us? And their wife was getting really tormented. Not tormented, more like she was feeling really bad on the inside. So then Sudama would tell his wife or his family about his pastimes with Krishna in the Gurukul. And then his wife one day told him, why don't you go to Krishna and ask him for some gifts or some money that we could use to sustain like the family. And so Sudama went to Dwarka, but first he wasn't sure. So he's like, oh, how can I go to the king because he's so great and I'm so low. How am I going to do this? I mean, I need to take something. So his parents
turned it off.
So basically his wife made some food for some poha, because Sudama used to say that Krishna used to love poha a lot. So he took some poha in a bag and he went to Dwarka. And then when he reached Dwarka, many people were saying, oh, what's this guy doing here? Because everyone in Dwarka, Krishna used to keep his praja, I think, basically very lively, and they all were very happy. And when they see this poor guy, they all started, like, making fun and blaspheming him. And then Sudama, he just got embarrassed, and he started to walk home. Then when Krishna heard from his soldiers that there's this person trying to talk to you, Krishna personally, he came, he ran, he went to Sudama and hugged him right there in front of everyone. He took him into the palace. Sudama, he was feeling so embarrassed that, oh, Krishna had to do this for me. And then Krishna washed his feet personally. And Sudama, he was feeling so, I don't know how to explain that feeling, because it was really deep, basically. So, and then Krishna was like, oh, so you must have come here for some reason. And then Sudama was like, nah, I was just missing you, so I wanted to come meet you. And then Krishna was like, oh, some reason you have to have come. Then Sudama, he said how his family needed some money. And so Krishna was like, yeah, I can give you some money. And then, wait.
Wait. This is quite an elaborate telling of the story. But why don't we pause here? And you can think about the rest of it, because there's two instructions in the story that I want to bring out. So I'll bring out one now. So what you just said it a minute ago. He brought Krishna brought him into his palace and washed his feet. So this shows that Krishna, of course, he was showing respect to a Brahmin, but really shows that Krishna likes to worship his devotees. So Krishna worships Sudama. It doesn't mean Sudama is supreme. So in the same way, Lord Rama worshipped Shiva at Rameshwaram. It doesn't mean that Shiva is supreme, but Krishna likes to worship his devotees. Arjuna commanded Krishna, drive my chariot between the two armies. Krishna was obeying the orders of Arjuna, but doesn't mean that Arjuna is supreme. But Krishna likes to serve his devotees. So, are you ready with the end of the story?
So when Krishna asked, why are you here? And then Sudama was like, oh, I really missed you, so I wanted to come meet you. Krishna, no, there has to be some reason. So I was like, no.
But where are you getting all of this, by the way?
Different sources.
You won't name the
source. DVD? DVD?
Some books and then some DVDs. Yeah, mixed.
Yeah, it is mixed. All right, well, you told it very well with a lot of feeling and a lot of detail. And there's some differences between what you said and what's in the Bhagavatam. And when people make these DVDs, you know, they don't always follow exactly. They have their own conceptions of what will be appealing to the audience, or no, they have their own ideas. So maybe I'll just finish it because, So, no, Sudama didn't ask for anything. He did not ask for anything, and Krishna didn't offer him anything. And so Sudama was just happy because he had met his friend Krishna and they had their loving exchange. So when Sudama was walking home, he was in bliss thinking of his association with Krishna. But then he you know, eventually he thought of his wife and, well, I'm coming empty-handed. I'm not bringing anything. But when he got to where his simple home was, he found that in its place there was a big palace and beautiful gardens and servants, and Krishna had, he had given Krishna just a morsel of broken rice. Not because Krishna likes poha, but because that was all they could borrow from the neighbors. But Sudama was very afraid of that opulence. He was afraid that he would forget Krishna. And he was more concerned about remembering Krishna than living in opulence. And he thought, if living in opulence is going to divert my attention from Krishna, then I don't want this opulence. But then Krishna, assured him that no, you will not forget me. You can live in this opulence in a detached way, and you will not forget me, and in the end you will come to me. So this is the real essence, that a devotee doesn't really mind whether he lives in opulence or poverty externally. What he wants is to be in loving relationship with Krishna. That's his happiness. And, you know, if Krishna wants him to live in a palace, then in the mood of service to Krishna, he can live in a palace. And if Krishna wants him to live in a shack, as long as he has Krishna consciousness, he's happy wherever he is. In fact, there's another story. Since we somehow got onto the subject of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, you know, he's like the most powerful of the demigods. And his wife, who knows who is the wife of Lord Shiva? Parvati. And who can say a few words about who is Parvati, other than the wife of Lord Shiva? Yes, Ravi?
She manifests material nature.
Yeah, she's like the manifestation of the material energy, Durga. So, she's also very powerful. Very powerful. And do you know where they live?
Kailash.
And what kind of a house do they live in Kailash? Huh? Sorry?
It's actually very beautiful, like the description of Kailash, like, in the Bhagavatam is actually very beautiful.
Yeah,
Kailash. But it's not visible to us.
Well, so no one knows what kind of a house they live in. Good, you're honest. They don't live in a house. They don't live in a house. They live under a tree. So, but people were telling them, you know, you're Lord Shiva, Mahadev, and your wife is Parvati, Durga, and you're living under a tree. You know, you should live in a house. Like here also, we have that social pressure. So. So finally, hearing it from so many people for so long, Shiva gave in. Okay, right. So we'll make a house cook, because he's not an ordinary man. He made a house made of solid gold. And then they had the housewarming, Griha Pravesh, and one sage came with 1,000 disciples, large number of disciples. And so Parvati prepared prasad, and she fed all the disciples. And she used up all the provisions in her kitchen to feed all the guests. So at the end, the rishi said, "Now, what about my dakshin? I've come to your home. You have to give dakshin." So they said, "Well, you know, we don't really have anything to give you. We used to live under a tree. Now we're living in a house, but all we had was the cooking ingredients, and we've already used up all the cooking ingredients to feed you all. So we don't have anything." They said, "Well, that's your problem. But I have come to your house, and you have to give dakshin." "Well, but we don't have anything. We don't have anything to give you." "You have to give dakshin." So then Shiva and Parvati consulted what to do, and they gave him the house. That was all they had. So they gave him the house, gold house, and they were back living under. So, again, there's so many instructions. One is that we get what we're destined to have. We can't artificially increase it or even decrease it. And they were happy. So that is the real wealth of a devotee, is Krishna consciousness. And that wealth can be achieved most easily in the present age of Kali by chanting the holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So is the microphone connected? Oh, okay. All right, well, I wanted to conclude with one more story about Sanatan Goswami and the touchstone. So who knows the story of Sanatan Goswami and the touchstone? Do you want to take a chance?
Not like
that. Okay. So, again, Lord Shiva afterwards, she's a little intimidated, but afterwards she'll tell you.
Okay.
So there was a worshipper of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva wanted to give him a boon, so he said, "I want the most valuable thing." Now, he thought the most valuable thing is touchstone. That whatever you touch with a touchstone, it becomes like gold. And so he went to, you can see Sanatan Goswami. He's living near the Jamuna River in Vrindavan, and he can give you the most valuable thing. So he went to him, And he said, I want the most valuable thing. And, you know, you mean, what do you mean? Touch the phone? Yeah. Oh, it's out in the back in the trash. So he went, picked through the trash, and he found it. So he touched some things that all turned to gold. He thought, wow, I'm going to be the richest man in the world. But then he thought, if Sanatan Goswami is keeping this in the trash, he must not consider it very important. He must have something more valuable than the touchstone. Maybe I should go back and ask for that. So he went back, and Sanatan Goswami said, oh, you want that thing? Oh, really the most valuable thing. All right, well then, you have to throw the touchstone in the river. So he hesitated because he knew that the value of the touchstone, it could turn things to gold. But still, he could figure that Sanatan Goswami definitely had something more valuable, but he wasn't sure what it was. But so he calculated and he decided to take the chance. So he threw the touchstone in the river, and he came back and he said, okay, now I want really the most valuable thing. And Sanatan Goswami said, okay, sit down, and I will give it to you.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So that is truly the most valuable. Hari Nam Chintamani, it's also a Chintamani japa. Hari Nam, but spiritual. It can give everything, everything. I mean, no consideration, material or spiritual, can give everything. Whatever the devotee wants or whatever is best for the devotee. And anyone can chant, anyone can dance, can be young, old, boy, girl. It's universal. It's universal. And not only is it universal, you can do it all together. Like, iPhones are pretty universal, but you don't do it together. Like, you know, they're together. They're in the car, they're in the park. But each one separately. But chanting is universal. Everyone can do it, and you can do it together. So it's a very nice group activity. The best. So this is the great gift of Krishna consciousness. It is this gift that makes people ready to give up anything and everything. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, and even some of our contemporaries in a way, like Yamuna Devi. And fully satisfied. Fully satisfied means they don't want anything other than Krishna consciousness, Krishna's name and Krishna's service. But they want more. They want to do more service. They want to chant more. But they're satisfied in the sense they don't want anything outside of Krishna. So, we'll speak more tomorrow. And so are there any questions or comments? Yes?
Could you elaborate more on your festival of Panipati?
Yes. Well, I'll speak more about the Panipati festival tomorrow morning. So if you come to the temple at 7 or 7:30 or tune in, we will do it, because it's not something that you can tell in 5 minutes. It takes more than that. David Darshan.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. During the Sadhu Sangha retreat, the Kirtan leaders were saying, sing from the heart and deeper from the heart. Without making it into a confession session, I couldn't do it. Can you please tell us how to chant from the heart, what one feels when one chants from the heart?
Well, there's a process, and I did mention that that on the way to the retreat, Madhava Prabhu's wife, Radhika Mataji, mentioned that she had heard that Srila Prabhupada, that a disciple had asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, what should be his mood when he chants. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should feel the presence of Krishna. But if you can't feel Krishna's presence, then you should listen attentively to every name. So that's like the basic, that you just try to fix your mind on the sound of the name. And when you do that, Krishna reciprocates. You can feel he's reciprocating, or in other words, you feel his presence. And then when you feel his presence, you call his names, it's more personal. It's like, you know, Krishna's there, Radharani's there, and they're hearing you call their names. And they respond. They respond. And whatever your desire is, because you're calling their name and then they're responding, yes, you've called my name, what do you want? Then whatever you want, you can say. So it may be to chant with attention, to chant with, to have more taste while chanting, or whatever it is. To be able to get up earlier in the morning so you can chant earlier in the day, or, you know, whatever would be favorable. I mean, you won't ask for anything material, that would spoil it, but something related to service. And depending on what it is, that can also come immediately. Like, say you could pray to take me out of the bodily concept. And Krishna will respond immediately. He'll respond immediately. Something will happen. I used to respond like that. Now I'm responding differently. This must be Krishna's response to my chanting. And another thing, Madhava Prabhu quoted Iyendra saying is, Iyendra would say that when you chant, you should cry for Krishna. And if you can't cry for Krishna, you should cry because you can't cry. And that's actually, but the whole thing is to really get into it, you know, really put yourself fully into it. Otherwise, it's just sort of words and it's just mental. But if you really put yourself into it wholeheartedly, just setting everything aside and really putting yourself fully into it, Krishna reciprocates. You can feel Krishna's presence, and then yes, from the heart you're calling his names, Radharani's names. But you know, chanting louder. Yeah, once I asked Srila Prabhupada something like, you know, about something about Maya, and he said, chant loudly. Chant loudly. Sort of, yeah, letting go all inhibitions and shame and just giving yourself to it. But sometimes the organizers of festivals, in a way, they can't absorb themselves as fully as the visitors, because they have to think about the organization. That's their service. The first time I invited His Holiness Indradumya Swami to South Africa, I was the GBC, and he had just come from the Amazon. And it was like, wow, that was like so exotic and so exciting and so amazing. And, you know, and I said, you know, wow, you know, I feel like I'm just sort of staying back here and just doing all these nitty-gritty things. And Maharaj said, well, what you're doing is very important. You know, what you're doing is allowing people like me to come in and lead kirtan and tell stories and show slides. And so it may be that maybe a little preoccupied with the organization. I don't know, you might have been tired from making so many arrangements, and that was like a facility to us. We didn't have to worry about anything because of all of you. And then when the time comes, someone else will be making the arrangements, and you can just come and forget about everything and just absorb yourself. So, I don't think you should be too hard on yourself. Devadarshan Prabhu. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Maharaji, we see even matter has a tendency to act as per their nature. Even most of the animals, they act according to their nature. But we as a human being, if our nature is Jiva Swarupa Vaidya Krishna Das, if our nature is to have a mood of servitude, then why we have opposite tendency? Why we have mood of being master, going in against of what our neutral qualities?
Yes. Well, what my godbrother Rindra Sarup says is that we, as this living entity, as a spirit soul, we have made a decision to surrender to Krishna, to be a devotee of Krishna, to come to our original position. But our minds are slow. It's like we've decided, but our mind hasn't kept up with our decision. And our mind is in the old mood of enjoying, wanting to enjoy and control and possess. So it takes time to retrain the mind. And the mind is, the mind is used to working on behalf of the false ego. So now Jiva Swarupai Krishnara Nitya Das, that's our real ego, that's our real identity, we're the eternal servant of Krishna, but the mind has been used to working for the false ego, the false conception that I'm the body, everything related to the body is mine, and I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, I'm the proprietor. So we've decided, but the mind is slow. The mind is acting the other way on the basis of false ego. So it's a struggle. It's a struggle. But yeah, kirtan helps, japa helps, associating with devotees, advanced devotees, worshipping the deity, immersing oneself in the holy dhams, all these things help to infuse the mind with spiritual impressions. Yes, Ravi?
When it comes to either enjoying or serving Krishna, what is the balance between approaching Krishna because we enjoy Him and His name versus approaching Him in order to serve Him?
Well, the two are not really different. Like one disciple, Gurudas, one of the early disciples, he told Srila Prabhupada that he liked playing the kartals. And he thought it was sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada said there's two kinds of sense gratification, material and spiritual. So playing the kartals in kirtan is spiritual. So if one is fortunate enough to relish the holy name, to relish devotional service in any way, to appreciate the beauty of the deities, to appreciate the taste of prasad, that's good. But we shouldn't indulge ourselves, even in spiritual sense gratification, at the cost of Krishna's service. Like it's described that Krishna had a servant named Daruka, who was also his driver. And once Daruka was fanning Krishna, and he was so overwhelmed with ecstatic love that he was tears were coming from his eyes and he was trembling. But he condemned his ecstatic symptoms because they were interfering with his service of fanning Krishna. So it's good if you relish the kirtan. But it shouldn't be that there's a fire in the kitchen, we need you to come and help put. No, no, I'm relishing. Don't disturb me. No. It's good if you're relishing, but the highest consideration is Krishna's service and Krishna's pleasure. And even if we have to sacrifice our own spiritual enjoyment or even ecstasy, if it's a matter of Krishna's service, then we set it aside for Krishna. So I think we have had a very good discussion, and we can proceed to the next item on the program. I'm not sure what the next item is. All right. I think that's a good proposal. How many are in favor of having prasadam now?